Welcome to Throwing Mountains Weekly Strength. I'm your host, Chris Bollinger. For the next 13 minutes or so, we're going to draw strength from the Bible. I encourage you to make this a daily practice on your own. Our third episode in the series on strategic topics in the Christian life is on faith. The Bible passage for this episode is Hebrews 12, 1-3. I'll read it from the NASB, the New American Standard Bible. Therefore, since we also have such a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let's rid ourselves of every obstacle and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let's run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking only at Jesus, the originator and perfecter of the faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. The spoon in the image for this podcast episode and this topic in the book, 52 Weeks of Strength for Men, comes from a scene in the film The Matrix. The main character, Neo, is living in the real world. His previous existence was as part of the Matrix, a neural interactive simulation developed by machines. By keeping people's brains connected to this dream world, the machines are able to siphon power off the people's unused bodies. The rebels who freed Neo have found a way to plug people back into the Matrix, but enable them to be extracted when they wish. Those rebels take Neo with them into the Matrix so that Neo can visit a woman called the Oracle. As Neo waits to see her, he observes a bald child bending spoons with his mind.
Do not try and bend the spoon. That's impossible. Instead, only try to realize the truth.
What truth?
There is no spoon.
There is no spoon?
Then you'll see that it is not the spoon that bends. It is only yourself.
Spoons don't exist in the Matrix because nothing real exists there. In the real world, however, bending a spoon with your mind requires bending an actual spoon with your mind. It's impossible. As impossible as throwing a mountain into the sea. We call our podcast the Throwing Mountains Podcast. That's an audacious name. It comes from two audacious passages about faith and mountains. In Matthew 17, Jesus casts out a demon that gave a boy terrible seizures. The disciples ask Jesus why they had been unable to help the boy. Jesus replies, "Because of your little faith. For truly I say to you, if you have faith like a grain of mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here to there,' and it will move, and nothing will be impossible for you." A few chapters later, Jesus curses a fig tree and it withers immediately. The disciples ask how. Jesus responds, "Truly I say to you, if you have faith and do not doubt, you will not only do what has been done to the fig tree, but even if you say to this mountain, 'Be taken up and thrown into the sea,' it will happen." So why aren't you moving mountains in your own life? Do you lack the faith? Christian faith is faith in God, that is, trusting in God. When you put your trust in God, you rely entirely on His great power and not on yourself. When you have only a tiny amount of faith or trust in God, then God can accomplish great things in and through you. So why doesn't it happen more often? You pray for healing in yourself or in someone you love. You have faith that God can and will do it. He doesn't. You know that God wants to bless and strengthen your marriage. You pray that He will. Your wife leaves you and doesn't come back. Your son can't get clean. You're stuck in a rut month after month and year after year. Don't you have enough faith? If you do, then why doesn't God answer your prayers? Our passage for this week comes from Hebrews 12. The previous chapter opens with this statement, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." Assurance. Conviction. Tell me more. The rest of the chapter is called the Faith Hall of Fame. It's a list of faith giants: Noah, Abraham, Moses, Gideon, David. They conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. But read on. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release, so that they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, wandering about in deserts and mountains, and in dens and caves of the earth. In the middle of that last sentence, there's this addition, "of whom the world was not worthy." They were destitute, afflicted, mistreated, killed. This world was not worthy of them. Faith is indeed the assurance of the things in which we hope, but we hope for more than is available in this world. God has something better for us. Let me read two of my favorite quotes. "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is come. I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." Preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, use words. The first is from 2 Timothy 4, 6-8, written by the Apostle Paul just before he was executed. The second is attributed to St. Francis of Assisi. "When I hear both, I think of the faith of my mom and my dad. My mom died at the beginning of March of 2020. God took her quickly at the end. The main reason, I think, was so that the church could be packed for her memorial service. You see, if she had died a few weeks later, when the entire United States was shut down for COVID, then we probably couldn't have had a public memorial service for her. In fact, we probably couldn't have been with her in the hospital during her final days and hours. She went into the hospital on a Sunday afternoon. By Tuesday evening, she no longer could speak or communicate much at all. My dad said goodbye to her then and went to one of my sister's homes for the night. He didn't want to be in the hospital to watch his wife of 62 years die. It was too painful for him. But she wanted him there, and so did God. Most of his life, my dad didn't talk a lot about God. Even though he attended church, my dad had a lot of questions about God that no one at church seemed able to answer. My dad searched for answers in books and in conversations with other people, but the answers he got didn't satisfy him. As a result, my dad's faith in God wavered at times, and about 25 years ago, he stopped attending church altogether. My mom, on the other hand, always had an unshakable faith in Jesus. When my dad drifted away from the church and his faith, my mom didn't confront him or nag him about it. She simply modeled her faith for him, quietly and consistently. After quite a few years, he started attending church with her again, and he realized that God had orchestrated their life together so that she could lead him to God. And he started to tell other people about it. My dad was a strong introvert. He was very uncomfortable expressing his emotions in front of other people. For decades, he rarely said much of anything about how he felt about my mom. But almost out of nowhere, my dad became the vocal leader of my mom's fan club. He told anyone and everyone that God had brought my mom and dad together and that God had done this for the benefit of my dad. The first time my dad laid eyes on my mom was during her freshman year in high school. She was the head majorette for an Akron high school, and she was performing at a Friday night football game. My dad was at that game only because he was in the wrong stadium. He saw my mom and was captivated by her, but then he and his buddies left and went to the right game. Nearly a year later, my dad and those same buddies were hanging out at Rex Lake in Akron, throwing a football to each other off a dock. My mom's father, who never went to local lakes, decided that day to go to Rex Lake and to take my mom with him. When they got there, her dad, who was in his 50s and an introvert, decided to join the group of young men who were throwing the football around on the dock. After the men did this for a while, my mom decided to come down to the dock. My dad recognized her and chatted with her for a few minutes. When she got ready to go, my dad asked her, "How old are you?" 14, she replied. My dad, who was 19, was crushed. He couldn't date someone so young. 3 days later, his friends were consoling him over ice cream at a place in downtown Akron. The door to the ice cream shop opened, and in walked an older couple with their daughter. The daughter was my mom. At that moment, my dad decided that he could, indeed, date a 14-year-old. He asked my mom out, and she accepted. Their 68-year love affair began. In the last 20 years of his life, my dad told that story, first to members of his family and then to pretty much anyone who would listen. With each telling, my dad thanked God for bringing my mom into his life. On Wednesday morning, one of my sisters alerted us that my mom was hanging on, waiting for my dad. He arrived in the ICU around 8 a.m. As he held her hand, we gathered around her bed and sang hymns to her. Then we said our goodbyes, and she got her crown of righteousness. Next week, I'll look at the big topic of forgiveness. I hope you'll join me for that. Please pick up a copy of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men. You'll find it to be a good resource on this journey. Have a good week, men.